Welcome to the Deep Dive. We take the sources you share, your curiosity, and really dig into them to find the most interesting bits.
And today, we're stepping back into the 1970s, Thailand specifically. We're looking through the eyes of Fred McCleary, a jet engine mechanic at Nakhon Phenom Royal Thai Air Force Base. NKP.
Yeah, NKP. Our source is primarily a YouTube transcript, Military Tales, episode 50. Featuring Fred himself.
And for you, our listener, the learner type who wants to get this unique view without getting bogged down, we're aiming for clarity, focusing on those, you know, surprising moments and details from his time there.
Exactly. Think late 74, early 75. The U.S. had officially pulled out of Vietnam, but things were still, well, very much in flux in Southeast Asia, as Fred's story shows.
Definitely. So let's start with his arrival. Why Thailand? What brought him there?
Well, it sounds pretty straightforward, actually. He'd been stationed up in Maine.
Cold.
Right. So he basically just wanted somewhere warmer. He put in for a warm climate assignment.
Simple as that sometimes, isn't it? Personal comfort meeting global events.
It really is. But Thailand wasn't exactly a relaxing beach vacation when he landed, was it? Mm-hmm. What were those first impressions like?
Well, the heat, obviously. Big change from Maine. But he also mentioned this really unpleasant smell.
Ooh.
Yeah, he tracked it down to the Kluang's sort of ditches or canals carrying sewage and, well, bacteria. Not the best welcome scent.
No kidding. Yeah. Intense heat and a nasty smell.
Mm.
Great start. And the environment itself, the weather, sounds like that was pretty challenging too.
Oh, definitely. He talked about the monsoon season, pouring rain, intense humidity, and the issued ponchos. Pretty much useless, apparently, just soaked.
Miserable.
And then the flip side was the dry season. Unbelievable amounts of dust.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Just constant dust.
Yeah, and this is where it gets more serious later on. He realized that dust, the environment, was likely contaminated with Agent Orange.
Ah, right, given the history of operations there.
Exactly. And Fred himself has dealt with health issues, tinnitus, he mentioned, and maybe other things he suspects are linked.
And getting that recognized by the VA was difficult initially.
Yeah. He mentioned having trouble with claims and that he was planning to talk to a lawyer who specializes in Agent Orange cases. It really drives home the long-term impact, doesn't it? Decades later.
Absolutely. Those hidden costs of conflict. Okay, so let's shift to his work, life on the base at NKP. What was his job exactly?
He was a jet engine mechanic working right on the flight line, getting aircraft ready for missions.
What kind of aircraft?
Mostly helicopters, a big CH-53s and also OV-10 Broncos. Those twin boom planes used for observation and attack support.
And he was involved in prepping aircraft for a pretty significant event, wasn't he? The Mayaguez incident?
He was directly involved. He worked on prepping 5 helicopters for that mission, though 4 actually took off.
Wow. Did he know what they were for at the time?
No, not initially. That's what's interesting. It highlights the compartmentalization, you know. He was just doing his job, getting the birds ready. He wasn't told the specific mission.
So how did news about the Mayaguez operation filter back to the base? What was the reaction?
Well, the initial word was that one of the choppers had gone down. Gearbox failure was the story floating around.
A mechanical issue.
Right. It wasn't until later that they pieced together it was part of the rescue attempt for the captured ship, the Mayaguez.
But the reality must have hit hard when they saw the aftermath.
Definitely. He described a Huey returning from the 40th Aerospace Rescue and Recovery folks. His team offered to help offload.
Yeah.
But they were told to stand back. And then they started unloading body bags.
Oh, man. That's heavy.
Really heavy. He even mentioned seeing smaller bags and the awful speculation among the guys, you know, wondering if a crash had happened over a civilian area.
Just underscores the human cost. Even for those not directly in the fighting.
What about the base itself? NKP. What was it like physically?
It was basically hacked out of the jungle.
Mm.
And the runways, they were made of PSP pierced steel planking. Left over from World War II tech, really.
Steel planking. Must have gotten hot. Incredibly hot under the Thai sun, he said. And he mentioned the sheet metal guys were always busy constantly patching up aircraft that came back with damage from missions.
Sounds like a nonstop operation.
Yeah.
What was the workload like for Fred and his crew?
Intense. He recalled working shifts up to 20 hours long sometime.
20 hours? Wow.
Yeah. With rotating shifts to keep maintenance going 24/7, they had roughly maybe 10, 12 CH-53s and 15, 20 OV-10s to keep flying.
That's a lot of aircraft. Did they ever run short?
He said he never remembered a shortage. Always something needing work. The OV-10s had replaced the older A-1 Sky Raiders by then, you know, the big prop plane.
Right. And engine work. If one needed major repairs.
They'd pull the engine right there on the flight line. Then it went off to the jet shop, could be gone for days, even weeks, depending on the problem.
So a constant cycle of maintenance and repair.
Absolutely. And he mentioned good teamwork, too. Jet guys helping prop guys, and vice versa. Everyone pitching in.
Yeah.
Plus, missions changed fast, so they were always rearming, reconfiguring aircraft, always busy.
Beyond the flight line, though, he had some interactions that gave him a window into local Thai life. He mentioned something called the Monkey House.
Yeah, the Monkey House. That was the local Thai jail at NKP.
A jail on the base.
Well, adjacent or part of the local setup there. He described it as pretty basic, walled, barred. And the striking thing, the inmates weren't given food.
No food provided?
None, which really struck Fred, comparing it to the U.S. system. A major difference in how things work, the values.
And he actually did something about
that. He did. He started taking fruit from the chow hall, you know, apples, oranges, whatever, and passing it through the walls to the people inside.
Wow. That's quite something. Real compassion there.
It really shows that.
Yeah.
And he told another story, a pretty stark one, about the local justice system. A Thai guard fell asleep on duty.
Uh-oh.
And his commander apparently shot him right there.
Good grief. That's incredibly harsh.
Yeah, it really hammered home how different the rules and consequences could be. Yeah. But he also met the local police chief, described him as very proud, very professional.
So a mix of experiences with the local authorities.
Right. And the underlying point was clear. They were guests in Thailand, a kingdom then, and Thai law applied. You could end up in that system.
A constant awareness needed. Mm-hmm. Now, Fred didn't just stay at NKP his whole tour, did he?
No, he had a brief stopover at Tan Son Hut in Vietnam at one point, and then back to NKP. And after NKP closed down.
It closed.
Yeah, operations shifted. He was reassigned to Utapao Royal Thai Navy Airfield.
Okay, Utapao. What was his job there?
Disassembling OV-10s, taking them apart to be shipped off to Germany.
Huh. Interesting turn. And Utapao had its own secrets, it sounds like. Air America. Secret planes.
Oh, yeah. He recalled seeing Air America installations, those unmarked planes associated with, well, less official operations at NKP and Utapao, maybe Takli too.
The spook stuff.
Kind of. But Utapao also had the really high-level assets. SR-71 Blackbirds.
The Blackbird. Wow.
Yeah. Super secret, strict warnings, no photos, don't even talk about them. And also U-2 spy planes.
The U-2 as well.
Right. And he described their landings, these chase cars like El Caminos or Rancheros, racing alongside to pop little wheels onto the wingtips right after touchdown because the plane couldn't balance on its own landing gear.
Chase cars putting wheels on a spy plane. That's amazing.
Isn't it? He was fascinated by those chase cars, the speed. As a mechanic, you can see why he'd appreciate the engineering and the tires that could handle that.
Yeah, I bet. It's those little specific details that really stick with you. So looking back, Fred went to a reunion later on.
He did, his first Thailand Air Force reunion. Said it was pretty emotional meeting other guys who served there at the same time.
Connecting with people who understood that specific experience.
Exactly. And he mentioned meeting only one other person, a guy named Duke, who was also at NKP during the Mayaguez incident.
Only one other?
Yeah, which really highlighted for him how compartmentalized everything was. You could be on the same base during a major event and barely know others involved.
Makes sense. He also reflected on the aircraft changing, right? From props like the A-1 Sky Raider to jets like the OV-10.
Yeah, he saw that transition. He understood why they still needed the slower, heavily armed props like the A-1 for certain jungle missions, even though jets like the OV-10 were coming in. Different tools for different jobs, basically.
And what about his thoughts on military service today? Did he comment on that?
He did. He actually advocated for bringing back a draft system.
Really? Why?
He felt it instilled discipline, gave young people valuable experience, kind of an old school perspective maybe, but that was his view based on his service.
Interesting. He also cleared up a technical point that the black smoke from B-52s.
Oh, yeah, the water burners. He explained it's basically just carbon particles in the water vapor they injected for extra takeoff thrust. Not necessarily pollution, just a side effect of boosting power.
Good to know. And one last anecdote really stood out about security, or maybe the lack thereof sometimes, with U-2 film.
Oh, that one. Yeah, he mentioned a pilot who had old 8mm films of U-2 takeoffs and landings that he'd apparently just sent off to Kodak to get developed.
Sending spy plane footage to Kodak. That's
wild. Yeah, pretty wild, right. Definitely suggests security wasn't always as tight as you might imagine or handled differently back then.
Definitely paints a picture. And finally, he touched on the bigger picture in the region, the secret war in Laos.
Right. He mentioned the Paris Accords were supposed to neutralize Laos, but North Vietnam and others largely ignored it, kept using Laos as a supply route. The Ho Chi Minh Trail ran through there.
Just shows the complexity, the limits of those agreements on the ground.
Exactly. So when you pull all these threads together from Fred's account, you get this incredibly rich ground level view.
Yeah, the intensity of the work at NKP, the challenging environment, that unique cultural backdrop.
And it really highlights why these personal stories are so crucial, doesn't it? They offer a perspective you just don't get from official histories, the day-to-day reality.
Absolutely. It makes you think, doesn't it?
It does. And maybe this is something for you, the listener, to chew on. How does a job like being a mechanic, something that might seem routine, end up woven into these huge global events?
Yeah. And what personal sacrifices are hidden in those day-to-day tasks? And maybe what other stories like Fred's are still out there, stories that could change how we see that whole period.
Lots to think about.
Definitely. Well, thank you for taking this deep dive with us today.